Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, continuing our Christmas-themed shows, and of course Christmas is sneaking up on us, just a few more days. An article from Michael Sneed's column in the Sun-Times, always very poignant, always something I like to read around the holidays. She writes, "This is a story about Santa Claus and the dreaded dead reckoning when your kid asks, is there really a Santa Claus? For all of those who have faced such an inquiry, I have a story and an update. Back in 1997, I wrote a Santa story about an old pal named Steve Cruz who had a son named Sam. It seemed Sam had learned the truth about Santa Claus right before the big night. Steve was very worried about how his son was feeling about this new turn in his life. So, on Christmas morning, Sam found a note from Santa. The note, actually written by Sam's loving and concerned dad, struck a chord in the Christmas hearts of many Sneed readers, who tacked it on their refrigerator, grabbed a hanky, and read the note to their children. So, before we get to the ending, let's begin at the beginning with Santa's first letter to Sam, which was written more than a dozen years ago by Steve Cruz, director of executive communications at the Harbinger Group, a PR agency. And he wrote, "Dear Sam, your dad stayed up last night to tell me that you now know as much about me as I do about you. Well, good. I'm glad you asked. And don't worry, no child ever really leaves me. Ask your mom. Ask your dad. They know I don't live in the North Pole. Too cold. They know I don't ride in a sleigh. Too dangerous. Still, they love me, and so will you, even 50 years from now. Oh, and what do you think happened last night, just as you were asking about me? Why, a baby was born out in Kalispell, Montana. That's right. Just as you were putting aside your belief, a brand new child was born who can put it to good use. So as long as that keeps happening, I'll never be out of a job. Sam, I want to wish you a wonderful life. If you don't mind, I will continue to drop by on future Christmases just to make sure you're okay. Love, Santa. P.S. Remember, you don't have to believe in me to know I'm there." Very touching letter. Now, as we put away our handkerchiefs, the following is an update from Santa, written just a week ago. "Dear Michael, I am in receipt of your letter and happy to report that Sam and his dad remain in good cheer. With time flying faster than my sleigh, Sam is graduating from college this year, and Steve, well, Steve is grayer but merrier for having made his son's last tuition payment. Unfortunately, not all the news is good. With each passing year, children are surrendering their belief in my giving spirit at an ever younger age. I see it in the way they tear open their presents. In too many cases, wonder and delight has been supplanted by what I can only describe as hunger. Joy has become conditional on having received specifically what was demanded. The good news is that my spirit is eternal, and truth will always be true. Despite how it sometimes appears, givers are happier and stronger than takers. The givers will prevail, and I will continue to drop by each year to gladden their hearts. Love, Santa." So a couple little essays, little notes from Santa updating us how things were a few years ago and how things are now. Very touching. I always enjoy reading that. And we just passed 12-12-12, December 12th, 2012. A couple, 12 interesting facts, a dozen 12s, in other words. In math, 12 is the smallest number with exactly six divisors. There are 12 days of Christmas. There are 12-step recovery programs. In Greek mythology, Hercules has 12 labors. Of course, we're familiar that there are 12 months in a year and 12 signs of the zodiac. 12 people have walked on the moon. King Arthur's Round Table has 12 knights. Milton's Paradise Lost is divided into 12 books. There are 12 basic hues on a color wheel. Finally, in bowling, 12 is the number of strikes needed for a perfect game. Kind of interesting statistically about 12, isn't it? You know, we see people day in and day out in this time of the year, in the season. We don't know how to, I guess, address them. Do we say Merry Christmas? Do we say Happy New Year? Do we say Happy Holidays? Do we say Happy Hanukkah? Happy Kwanzaa? Blessed Kwanzaa? A little essay from Ron Klamert from Aurora. Only one holiday greeting will do. Why can't we just say Merry Christmas? I miss wishing people a heartfelt greeting that signifies the season and the real meaning of the Christmas holiday. I miss the reference to God, our Savior Jesus Christ, and the true meaning of this special time of the year. The generic Happy Holidays means nothing. It has no meaning and is designed and accepted as a neutral greeting so that nobody can possibly be offended. Happy Holidays is a mindless noise. It produces a response from people that is designed for them to shop and spend. The holiday is secular, material, boring. Spend your money and worship privately in your home. Is that what we want? I don't believe it is. If you do not like Christmas and do not want to be part of it, this is America and is your right and should be respected. Why can't we as a country accept the true meaning of the season and respect our right to say Merry Christmas? Let's bring this tradition back full circle. Let's bring back the beauty and symbolism of Christmas. Let's do something kind for a stranger and help the needy. Spend meaningful time with family and friends. Give, volunteer, and make a difference. Say, Merry Christmas, and say it proudly. This is a celebration of the birth of a child, a promise of joy, a hope for peace for all mankind. Come on, say it with me. Don't be shy. Merry Christmas. Christmas is a fusion of cultures and traditions. It's not exclusion. We need to greet each other without fear of error, without fear of retribution, without compromise, without fear of offending. Just say Merry Christmas. When I say Merry Christmas, I hope I don't have to hurry into and a Happy Hanukkah and Happy Ramadan. There's plenty of diversity in this land and the abundance and means to communicate each tradition. Surely, we're mature enough as a society that we can tolerate, even revel in, the great celebrations of each individual and each culture. There is plenty of time and room for me to deepen my understanding about each cultural and spiritual rite. Celebrate our diversity. Cherish our traditions and accept our differences. That is the promise of living as an American. Merry Christmas. From Ron Klamert in Aurora. Merry Christmas, Ron. Merry Christmas, everyone else. I want to make sure we get the word out. Spoke with our good friend Mary Ann Murphy Orland, who is appearing and has been appearing and will be appearing at Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee, every Friday evening with our good friend George Howe from 9 to 12. Stop by and, of course, see George play the piano and sing a little bit, and Mary Ann does such a great job as a vocalist. But the most wonderful time of the year, an unconventional holiday show with Laura Freeman, Becky Menzie, and Marianne Murphy Orland at Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee. Sunday, December 16th at 7 o'clock for reservations 773-278-1830. Not quite ready to haul out the holly? What you need is a little something to get you into the spirit. We strongly recommend A wild and wonderful evening with cabaret favorites Marianne Murphy Orland, Becky Menzie, and Laura Freeman, singing the songs you expect and some you definitely don't. Merry Christmas, darling, check. Silent Night, check. Keep your sneaking Wonderland, what? You're in for some surprises. Three very talented vocalists, of course, from the Chicago Cabaret Professionals, and they'll be at Davenport's this Sunday, December 16th, 7 o'clock, for reservations 773-278-1830. Becky Menzie, Laura Freeman, and Marianne Murphy Orland. And if you have a chance, stop by. Starting to wonder about what we're going to be doing about snow for Christmas. One of the articles in the Tribune said, White Christmas may be a dream. This year, Chicago could set record for latest snowfall. Snow lovers despair. Snow haters rejoice. Chicago could be within days of breaking another snowless record, and the possibility of a white Christmas is looking bleak, according to meteorologists. The latest date, Chicago has received its first measurable snowfall since record-keeping began in 1884, was on December 16, 1965. This is the latest date we've had snow. Chances are the snow will hold off through at least Sunday, which would tie that mark. Forecasts call for relatively warm, dry days ahead into the weekend, with highs in the upper 40s and possibly into the 50s. There's a 70% chance of precipitation this weekend. It doesn't look like we'll have a measurable snow through Sunday. Right now, it looks a little more like rain, said Mark Ratzer from the National Weather Service. At midnight on Monday, Chicago officially broke the record for the longest stretch between measurable snowfalls at 281 days. As the days without snow continue, the record is extended. WGN-TV meteorologist Steve Kahn said the next 2 weeks aren't looking snow either. A storm is expected to move into the U.S. from the Pacific Ocean, but it looks like it's going to stay south. Based on what we're seeing now, there's no real potential for major snow in the White Christmas. Ah, nuts. The accepted definition of a white Christmas is at least 1 inch of snow on the ground on Christmas. About 40%. That's an interesting statistic. Only about 40% of Chicago Christmases since 1884 have been considered white. We had a little snowfall the other day, but negligible. So, the latest snowfall, December 16th, 1965, looks like we're going to break the record. The earliest snowfall, which is interesting, was October 12th. 2006. Not a chance. But what can you do? That's the way it is. Some great music today on the show from Tony Bennett's The Christmas Album, Snowfall. Of course, a great classic written by Mel Torme. The Christmas song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering
this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
I have endeavored in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my readers out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly and no one wish to lay it. Signed their faithful friend and servant in December of 1843, Charles Dickens. Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I'm going to relate. And something wonderful is happening at the Goodman Theater. Goodman Theater marks its 35th anniversary of A Christmas Carol, a holiday tradition enjoyed by more than a million Chicagoans and dubbed a joyous present for the entire family. Goodman Theater associate producer Steve Scott directs the anniversary production, starring one of Chicago's best actors, bar none. Larry Yando in his fifth turn as Ebenezer Scrooge, a performance hailed as stellar and commanding. A Christmas Carol runs through December 29th in the Goodman's Albert Theater. A Christmas Carol has become my favorite holiday event over the years, and I'm thrilled to direct this 35th anniversary production, said director and Goodman associate producer Steve Scott. We've assembled a cast of some of Chicago's best actors to bring this story to life, including the redoubtable Larry Yando as Scrooge. I hope that we can make this year's edition even scarier, funnier, and more emotionally powerful than it's been in the past. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage and screen, member of Goodman Theater's Artistic Collective, nationally recognized director having worked with such luminaries as Horton Foote, David Mamet, Michael Maggio, and posthumously Charles Dickens, board member of Season of Concern, teacher, mentor, one of the brightest stars in the world of Chicago theater, and the director of the 35th annual production of Dickens' classic A Christmas Carol, now at the Goodman Theater, 170 North Dearborn, through Saturday, December 29th, Mr. Steve Scott. Steve, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you, and congratulations on bringing the joy of Christmas to everyone at the Goodman.
Well, I'm glad. I certainly didn't do it alone. I'm certainly glad to have had a hand in it, yeah.
It's got to be fun to do this, and especially, of course, it's fun directing and the things you do, but this is the Christmas Carol, Steve. This is great.
It is. It's a great deal of fun. I mean, it's a big show, and there are lots of things that you have to coordinate, and you're very aware that audience members are going to come and see it and be very kind of critical about what they see and compare it to other productions they've seen in other years that you've done it. But at the end of the day, it's a delight to do, and it makes Christmas all the more special for me and for everybody who's associated with the show.
Maybe at this time of our lives and this time of where we're at in the world, that it's an age of hope, and the Christmas story is a hopeful story. It's a story of redemption, a miser who becomes generous, a man like Scrooge who has a small heart who ends up with a big heart, and it's because of what he's transformed as he goes through the various story of A Christmas Carol.
I think you're exactly right, and, you know, there are times that we're all pretty much like Scrooge.
Sure.
You know, I am, in terms of our outlook on life and our kind of cynicism as we're approaching life, and it's wonderful to go through this journey with Scrooge and know that we can be redeemed ourselves, and we can redeem ourselves if we just kind of open our eyes and see what life is really about and what the world is really about. And I think the most important message of the show is how we all connect to each other. And in the world of 2012, where everything seems to be pulling us apart and kind of isolating us, I think that's a very potent message to experience, that we really are all connected and we're all part of the same family.
I guess the reason for the theater, one of the mission statements of a theater, whatever that theater is to touch and engage people's intellect and imagination and creativity. And certainly when one goes to see the Christmas Carol, I know myself having seen it, I can't tell you how many times, whether it's with Alistair Sim on TV or at the theater, at the end I still cry because it touches everybody's heart. And I think that's what Christmas Carol does so well. And everybody goes and visits your Christmas Carol feels the same way.
I hope so. I know I certainly do. I've seen it, I don't know how many dozen times through the past 35 years, and it always moves me too, whether I've directed it or whether I'm just sitting there as an audience member. So it's a very potent story that Mr. Dickens came up with. He did a pretty good job.
And we started writing this back in October of 1843, and a few weeks later he has this.
Yeah, it only took him 6 weeks to do it. It's kind of amazing.
Here we are so many years later enjoying it. I'm going to read something here. One of our town's critics wrote very kind of, illustrates what A Christmas Carol is about on the Goodman stage. It should be said that this is a scary show in the deepest sense of that word, but also a joyous one. On the one hand, it deals with selfishness, greed, the emotional scars that can come with poverty, and the fears of mortality. On the other hand, it's all about the power of love, the rewards of generosity, of spirit as much as of purse, and redemption. It is full of ghosts, some benign, some terrifying, and it is full of family life in all its guises. It is also full of music, and certainly this is a musical show, but the word that sticks out is family, and it's a great family show, Steve.
Exactly, and I think that's one of the reasons it's been so popular for the last 35 years. It really is a place where parents and children and grandchildren can experience things together, and each can have a somewhat different experience, but it's a great way of bringing families together, both in the watching of the show and then in talking about the show and just the experiencing of what Mr. Dickens has created.
How many times have you directed it?
This is the sixth time that
I've
directed. So I know it pretty well by now.
But how do you bring how do you tweak it? How do you bring something new to it every year?
Well, I try to involve a number of new artists each year.
Okay.
We have certainly some actors who have been with the show for a long time and are beloved by our audiences. But I try to bring some new faces into the show each year, and their perspectives really help me see things differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important because you have to keep it fresh and you have to keep finding new stuff and you can do that most easily through the eyes of somebody who hasn't been through it all the many times that I've been through it. So that's what I basically do. And then we spend a lot of time around here discussing the show and analyzing the show. We start working on the next year's production literally the week after the current production closes.
Do you really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
We take this very seriously here.
Wow.
Spent a lot of time looking at what's happened and what's worked and what we would like to maybe make some changes with and kind of how we feel differently about it now than we might have 5 years ago in one way or another. So it's an ongoing process, certainly.
Well, Larry's been a great Scrooge. He's being identified as Scrooge, but I remember when Bill Norris was Scrooge for so many years.
Bill was the first Scrooge I worked with.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we have had so many wonderful actors playing this role, and Larry and Bill and Rick Snyder and Tom Mula and others through the years. And it's one of those, in some ways it's a role like Hamlet. I mean, there are certain things that have to happen, but each actor brings his own distinctive personality and his own distinct touches to the role. Larry has done a wonderful job for 5 years, and then when he decides to move on, we'll bring in somebody else, and I'm sure they will be just as distinctive. It's really a beautifully written role as much as anything else.
Does everybody want to be in the Christmas Carol? Do you have people that are knocking on the door saying, hey, Steve, you know, I'd like to get into, maybe I'll play Fezziwig or something?
I certainly do have people, you know, the years that I'm directing, I certainly have friends in the acting community who drop very strong hints about wanting to be in it, because you know it's a nice job and it runs for a long time and so it's a nice paycheck. But more than that, I think it's become noted in the acting community as a great way to spend the holidays.
Oh, sure, right.
Because the cast, partially because they work so hard and they do so many performances each week, they really kind of form their own family. And it's really kind of moving to see how close they get to each other and how much the family really grows out of the ensemble of actors. And so a lot of actors love doing the show because of that feeling. It's not something that you always get as an actor.
I remember Brad Mott, our good pal Brad Mott, played Fezziwig, and then he lost all that weight. I said, how are you going to do this again?
Well, you know, and we've had Fezziwigs of varying sizes. Last year, the wonderful actor Ross Lehman.
Right.
He's kind of the size of Brad's thigh. a lot of different actors can get away with a lot of different things.
That's funny. Well, it's always fun. What's next up for Steve Scott?
The next show I'm doing, I'm on the faculty at Roosevelt University in the Theater Conservatory there, so I'm doing a production of The Grapes of Wrath with the students at Roosevelt, which is about as far from Christmas Carol as you can possibly get.
Well, it's funny, I'm on the board at the Roosevelt Chicago College Performing Arts.
I
didn't realize that, but we're certainly looking forward to that. Lucky for those kids to be working with such a distinguished director.
Well, I have a lot of fun doing it, and there are some amazingly talented students over at Roosevelt.
You know, it is true, and they have the opportunity. One thing we talk about, of course, is the many theaters in Chicago that they have an opportunity to show what they can do.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of them go on to very distinguished careers in the profession. So I always like working over there with the students. They do some wonderful stuff.
You know, Sean does a great job, and he takes over the role from Joel.
From Joel, who has done a great job.
Oh, gosh, he's a heck of a guy.
Yeah. No, it's a lovely place to work.
A great place. It's terrific to have you. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, and join me, Steve,
God
bless us
everyone.
Goodman Theater marks its 35th anniversary of A Christmas Carol, a holiday tradition enjoyed by more than a million Chicagoans and dubbed a joyous present for the entire family. Goodman Theater Associate Producer Steve Scott directs the anniversary production on the line. With us right now is Steve Scott. Steve, a pleasure to have you, and congratulations on the great success that you're having at the Goodman, and certainly look forward to what you're going to be doing at Roosevelt.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin. It's great talking to you.
And Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you and your family.
Same to you, sir.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Steve Scott, the very talented director and multi-talented director of the Goodman Theater, who is now helming the production of A Christmas Carol, the 35th anniversary production of A Christmas Carol. You have to go see it because it's a great way to spend time in the theater, certainly around the holidays, and introduce the kids to theater. For information, 312-443-3800. David's Tea makes its Chicago debut. Inspired modern tea shop brings fun tea approach to Chicago locations. As the cold winter temperatures fill the air, a new hot spot will give Chicagoans a delicious new way to warm up. Chicago is home to a contemporary tea shop with more than 150 varieties, including several never-before-seen flavors. Canadian loose-leaf tea retailer David's Tea offers teas sold loose by the ounce and to go by the cup, hot or iced, in a friendly environment by well-informed, passionate staff. The company, which last year opened at two successful locations in New York City and this month is opening locations in San Francisco, continues its growth with stores in Chicago at 1645 North Damon in Bucktown, 3530 North Southport, and 922 West Armitage in Lincoln Park. This unique tea establishment will be a new destination for Chicago's food, drink, health, and wellness lovers, says David Tea's CEO, Jevon Eagle. Chicago is one of the nation's best cities for food and drink, so naturally we are thrilled to introduce our unique approach to tea to the Chicago area. David's Tea co-founder David Siegel, who personally selected the locations, adds, "Since the creation of the company, becoming a part of the fabric of a community is of utmost importance to us. We wanted to come to Chicago because of the city's strong support of culture and pride in the neighborhoods." On the line with us right now is the award-winning businessman, nationally recognized leader in the field of retail sales, having successfully headed Staples and McKinsey & Company, global merchandising strategist, proud graduate of both Dartmouth and the Harvard Graduate School of Business Administration, and now the CEO of David's Tea, leading that unique company in its introduction to the American market, Mr. Jevon Eagle. Jevon, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thanks very much, Kevin.
It's great to have you on, and what a great location in Bucktown. What a great store. You know, you walk in, Kevin, and I did this the other day. Lisa Tipton was the manager. It's clean. It's bright. You have so many teas. That's the only problem. You have so many teas to choose from. You don't know which one to go. But the people are so friendly, and they are passionate, and they're informative. So they'll kind of walk you through this. So it's a destination place that you come in and keep coming in.
Well, that's exactly right, Kevin. In fact, we call the people who work in our stores tea guides.
Okay,
because
that's
they're
right.
There to guide you through the whole experience. And the goal is that when you leave the store, you're smiling.
I didn't see anybody that wasn't.
That's awesome. And hopefully you bought some tea while you were there,
well,
too.
Well, you know, I did. And I like the accoutrements you have. You have these special cups with the tea strainer in there, Kevin, which makes it very easy. And you have you put the top on so it steeps there. And you can have this portable tea cup that goes with you and so forth. I mean, you got it all covered. It's a great idea.
Well, that tea filter that you're talking about is patented by us, and it's very special. And what it does is it allows you to make loose leaf tea as easy as possible. We want to make loose leaf tea fun, but we also want to make it accessible. It's very, very easy, and all you need is a spoon and one of these filters, and you can have loose leaf tea wherever you are.
You're like the Baskin Robbins of tea.
That's exactly right. With 150 plus.
That's right.
Options,
a lot of different flavors. That's true.
Line is we have something for everyone, and the goal is when you walk into the store, the first thing that happens is someone hands you a sample of tea of the day. And then the goal is to engage all your senses. You come over to the bar, and you're invited to smell all these different teas, and then the tea guide is there to basically romance you and tell you all about the story behind the teas, what it might taste well with, and then how things that you might eat while you're drinking the tea, what occasions are great. So it's really meant to be a whole experience.
The canister that you have, and for our listeners,
yes.
This is a canister. It's like a jar. Yeah. But it opens up. The top flips up so you can take a sniff of what the tea smells like and basically what it's going to taste like. And
exactly.
It gives you that idea, which is very unique. And if you want to take a little sample, you can take a little sample and take home what you want.
You can buy as little or as much as you want.
Right.
And the other thing that you can do is any one of the 150 teas that we have, we can make you hot or iced right now.
Right.
So if you want a cup now, you can take that with you. And then, of course, you can take as much or as little as you want home with you. So what happens when I work in the stores is often people are bringing multiple different types of tea home with them. And then this way, when they're serving tea for themselves, their family, their guests, they can also have a tea that might work for everyone as well.
Is tea good for you, Kevin?
Tea is tremendously good for you. It's, of course, a natural product. And in addition to that, there's no calories. You know, I think one of our teas is 2 or 3 calories,
mm-hmm.
but it's pretty much no calories. And then we know, of course, that there's antioxidants and polyphenols in many of the different types of tea as well. While we don't make any health claims, certainly there's plenty of other people who do make health claims about tea.
Now, you have a mad scientist sitting somewhere in the offices of David's Tea.
We do.
Thinking of all these different teas you could put together. Well, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try this. Oh, let's try this one here.
Well, one of our team members who's very important to us, his nickname is the Tea Guru. And he has over 25 years of experience.
Really?
To tea estates all over the world. And we actually have all kinds of webcasts and other things that he participates in as well. And, of course, David, the namesake of the company, is all over the place as well, and he is an expert on tea also.
Tell us a little bit about David.
David's extraordinary. He's very young. He's 31 years old, and he founded this company with his second cousin, who is a retail legend, Herschel Siegel, in Canada. And the two of them, both living in Montreal, decided to pair up experience and youth and all kinds of energy from both of them. And David has this boundless passion. Our vision is to share our passion for tea with the world, and a lot of that comes from David, mm-hmm. From this great passion he has for wanting to make a difference and his great love of tea.
Now, you guys are from Canada.
The company was founded in Montreal, and the two founders, David and Herschel, are both currently living in Montreal, and the company's main headquarters is in Montreal. We've also opened a corporate office in Newton, Mass., in Boston, where we just opened 2 new stores very recently as well.
Well, that's where you hang out. That's your hood.
Well, I hang out everywhere, but I spend when I'm sleeping at, quote, home, I'm in Boston. But I'm visiting David's Tea stores, and my biggest problem is when I visit a David's Tea store, I jump right behind the counter and start just helping customers. So it makes it challenging, though, to speak to my team members.
You know, what is the goal in Chicago here, Jevon?
Well, the goal is to share a passion for tea with everyone in Chicago and to make tea fun and accessible for them. And I got to tell you, we're off to an amazing start. I was actually in Chicago last week. I was working in all three stores. I was late to my appointments all three times because I couldn't get out of the stores. And I have to say, Chicago has really embraced us. The people who are coming in are so into it. These are people who really do appreciate, who appreciate food and health and the environment, and who love the idea of tasting different teas. So I lived in Chicago 4 years myself, after business school.
Okay.
And my wife went to medical school in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And both of us are huge fans of the city.
Well, you know, you've opened some great neighborhoods, as you know.
Yeah.
And certainly young people are in those neighborhoods, and the regentrification of that those neighborhoods are continuing. A great idea for a Christmas gift, little Christmas boxes of tea and so forth.
Our business quadruples during the month of December because people in Canada and now increasing, you know, now that we're in the U.S., really get that this is the perfect holiday gift. It's something for everyone for the holiday. And not only do we have special holiday blends, but we have the most beautiful gift boxes. They look like high-end cosmetics. You don't even have to buy gift wrap for these boxes. They're so beautiful. We have something called the Ultimate Gift, which is all the different teas you can imagine with beautiful steepers and our perfect spoon. We have something called the Perfect Gift, which is our perfect mug as well as some tea samples. And then we have all these different gift boxes in various flavors. We have one that's chocolate teas. We have one that's non-caffeinated teas. We have one called Around the World. We have one that is sweet teas. We have collectible tins. We have tea that comes in ornaments that can be put on the tree.
That was a great idea. I saw those on the counter. That was a great idea.
We even had, it's Hanukkah right now, we have something called 8 days of tea for one day.
Okay.
And the reason is it's just such a lovely gift. It's the right price point. It's a really thoughtful gift, and it appeals to everyone.
Well, it appealed to everybody that I saw at the store the other day, and I'm sure it will throughout the holidays. And once people get the feel for it, get in the habit of coming by, then you've kind of captured a customer, and those customers will tell other people too.
That's how the company was built in Canada. We do no advertising, and we do invest in the community, in street fairs, in farmers markets, in sampling on the street, but we don't do any advertising. It really is about getting to know the community and word of mouth. One other thing that people can do is all of this product is available at davidstea.com, and we ship for free over $50, and under that it's a flat fee of $5. So if you want your favorites and you want to be sitting at home, you can always do it that way. But, of course, the best experience is to come into the store and engage with our tea guides.
Yeah, you got to go into the store to see that. It's always a lot of fun. You know, we have great people at Nick Harkin and Jenny Topolowski at Carol Fox getting the word out. They will continue to do so, of course. And something everybody should experience, stopping at David's Tea. Before even entering the store, customers are greeted by the welcoming and engaging staff and offered a free tea sample. Inside, the atmosphere is airy, modern, and colorful. Behind the counter is the tea wall, a vibrant display of color-coded canisters that house the company's massive tea collection, including white, green, oolong, black, and herbal blends. Store visitors are encouraged to smell the different teas from the specifically designed tins before making their selections. David's Tea at 1645 North Damon in Bucktown, at 3530 North Southport, and 922 West Armitage in Lincoln Park. On the line with us right now is the CEO of David's Tea, Jevon Eagle. Jevon, if people would like to get some information, a website I'm sure they can go on to?
davidstea.com. It's very easy. Just plug it in, and you can learn about the company. You can read about the products. You can sort the different teas. We have gift ideas on that website, and, of course, we have our store locator. So if anyone doesn't remember the address, they can find it. And when they travel to New York or San Francisco or Boston, they can find David's Tea stores there. And they can find almost 100 different David's Tea locations in Canada as well.
Wait a second. That's not Boston. It's Boston, isn't it?
You got it.
Next time you're in Chicago, stop by and say hello. Will you please? I'd like to meet you personally. And anything we can do to get the word out for David's Tea, we're happy to.
Awesome. I look forward to it.
Happy holidays, Jevon.
Thanks, Kevin. Take care,
my pal. Bye-bye. Jevon Eagle, the CEO of David C. You have to stop in one of the shops. It's great. They really are. And there's three of them, of course. It's 1645 North Damon in Bucktown, 3530 North Southport, and 922 West Armitage in Lincoln Park. And great place. And the one on Damon, 773-697-9737. He asked for Lisa Tipton. Very, very friendly people. And a lot of tea to choose from. Don't be intimidated because they'll walk you through. It's a lot of fun. Don't want to forget to mention the Provision Theater presents The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey. Backed by popular demand, after a critically acclaimed world premiere production last season, this beautiful moving holiday treat is backed by popular demand. The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey, based on one of America's most loved children's books, stars Jim Rank as woodcarver Jonathan Toomey, a recluse with a secret past. A widowed mother, company member Susan Moniz, and her young son move into town and commission the ill-tempered woodcarver to create a replica of a nativity set given to the boy by his father. Their relationship starts out a rocky one, but soon blossoms into something that helps them both to move on. The story of love, redemption, and above all, hope, will make this beloved musical a holiday classic for years to come. And that's at the Provision Theater, located at 1001 West Roosevelt Road, kitty corner from St. Ignatius, right next to UIC. And for information, 312-455-0065. Beautiful Christmas play, certainly a great way to begin a new tradition with A Christmas Carol and The Nutcracker. Beautiful story, very touching, and something I think you'll all enjoy. Provision Theater does a terrific job. Get back to a little music. The Christmas album, Snowfall. Tony Bennett will sing one of the classics, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Christmas future is far away. Christmas past is past. Christmas present is here today, bringing joy that will last. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, far away. Here we are, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. The years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough. A merry little Christmas now.
It is Christmas Eve in Nuremberg, Germany, and Dr. Stahlbaum is giving a party for his children, Clara and Fritz. Godfather Drosselmeyer arrives, bringing presents and amuses the children with mechanical dolls. To Clara, he gives a nutcracker in the shape of a toy soldier. The spiteful Fritz breaks it, but Drosselmeyer mends it at once. The party goes on, grown-ups and children enjoying themselves, until Clara falls asleep, clutching her present in dreams. And magically, she dreams of the battle with the Mouse King, her nutcracker as he turns into a handsome young prince, the Snow Queen, the Sugar Plum Fairy in the Land of the Sweets, and the classic music of Tchaikovsky. And as has been described in a commentary written on the nutcracker, it is through Dr. Drosselmeyer's magic and love that this never-ending dream of Christmas transports Clara and enables each of us to revisit the land of innocence, our childhood. Ruth Page, Civic Ballet's The Nutcracker, the beloved holiday classic, comes to life once more with performances throughout Chicagoland. Ruth Page, Civic Ballet's popular recreation of the beloved holiday classic, comes to life once more this Christmas season. Originally presented in the Erie Crown Theater from 1965 until 1997, this performance recreates Ruth Page's beloved original full-length staging of The Nutcracker. Exquisite dancing, stunning costumes, and magical settings in the land of snow and the kingdom of the sweets. The Nutcracker promises holiday joy for children of all ages. It'll be presented Saturday, December 15th at 1 and 5 p.m. and Sunday, December 16th at 3 p.m. at the James Lumber Center at the College of Lake County in Grays Lake. For information, 847-543-2300. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning ballet dancer who has performed with Ruth Page, Ballet Theatre Chicago, and the Edinburgh Festival. Laura has been associated with River North Dance Chicago, Giordano Dance Chicago, and Hubbard Street Dance Company. University teacher, mentor, one of the brightest stars in the world of ballet and contemporary dance, and the children's director for the Ruth Page Civic Ballet and their presentation of Tchaikovsky's classic The Nutcracker, Ms. Laura Wade. Laura, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Well, thank you very much.
Great to have you. And as we had talked the other day, Laura, we grew up with Ruth Page's rendition of The Nutcracker, and it's something that I certainly did and all my kids looked forward to year in, year out, and it's something special for all of us.
It was a very special thing to be part of. I did it for 16 years, and it was amazing. When I very first started, Ruth Page was still coming into rehearsal. Larry Long was the director, and he ran most of it, but Ruth would still come in and watch some of the rehearsals and give her opinions. And so I feel like I got the taste from the very beginning.
You've continued the legacy. Now, was Ruth a ballet dancer herself?
Yes, she was. She was a very innovative ballet dancer, though. She did, her training was ballet. She danced with the Ballet Russe. But she then also did a lot of American choreography. That was her thing. She did a ballet on Frankie and Johnny, the song. And she did the Flittermaus. She also liked to do ballet versions of full-length operas, but she'd do a one-act version of the opera in a ballet. So she did a lot of unusual things. She teamed up with, what was the old ballet teacher from Stone Cameron, Stone, that she and Stone were partners, and they choreographed a lot of things together, like this Frankie and Johnny.
And you became involved with the Nutcracker, of course, and throughout all these years have continued with it. Having done it so long, of course, you had mentioned you were part of the Arabian dance, which was pretty a hot dance at the, as it continues, very much so. And you continue with the Nutcracker, and it must be just so remarkably satisfying to see all the young people that have come and have watched and even have become great dancers because of that first exposure to the ballet.
Oh, absolutely. There is such continuity. I teach at Northwestern University, and now there's a young woman who is, she's getting her degree in psychology. But she was, I know her originally from when she was Clara.
Oh, really?
And she was just one of the most talented, talented little girl, and she was a terrific Clara. And then, of course, she kept dancing. She eventually danced with the Joffrey. And now, after she has danced, she's going back and getting her psychology degree. She's also very brilliant. But it's wonderful to, all these people that go through. There's John Atterbury and his sister Chrissy Atterbury are still dancing, and they both were children in the Nutcracker, and now they're adults, I think late 20s, and still dancing in it.
And what was, again, we were talking about the other day, what was the name of the man who was Drosselmeyer for so many years?
Richard Ellis.
Richard Ellis, right.
Yes. Oh, he was just a marvelous performer, and he did it, I think, for really almost all of the years that we were at Erie Crown. He was from the Royal Ballet and was, I think, the young prince. He was the young boy prince at the Royal Ballet.
Wow.
And then, of course, danced with them and then moved here with his wife. And they had a school, a very good school, Ellis du Ballet, for many years.
You know, I had the opportunities I mentioned to bring my granddaughter for the first time to the Nutcracker. I can't tell you what it made me feel like. Her eyes were so big as she saw the tree grow, and she saw Madame Ginger, and she saw the great sugar plum fairies dancing around. And this is something that, as many times as I've seen it, it's still a thrill. It's still a thrill for the grandparents and the parents, maybe even great-grandparents and children, to continue that legacy of what Tchaikovsky started so many years ago. Interesting genealogy. It was written in 1816, a story, The Nutcracker and Mouse King, by E.T.A. Hoffman, and revised by Alexander Dumas, who, of course, who wrote Count of Monte Cristo and Three Musketeers. Tchaikovsky started in 1890, premiered in 1892, and really wasn't accepted that well. Came in San Francisco in 1944, Balanchine in New York, and then, of course, the Joffrey and Ruth Page, and now it's in most of the repertoire of the ballet companies throughout the country.
Absolutely. It is really funny to think that it really was not kind of a hit when it first when he first did it, but it surely is now, and every company in America does it, and it's a very bonding experience for dancers all over the country, because you just know that everybody, wherever they are, is doing Nutcracker and listening to the same music, doing maybe different choreography all over the country, but you know, getting to dance with kids, and like you're saying, even when you take them to the show, but also when you dance with them, it's you kind of see it anew through their eyes and the excitement of the children dancing in it.
How do you bring something new, since you've been doing it so often, to the Nutcracker? How do you tweak it a little bit?
Well, it's by who's dancing role.
Okay, sure.
You know, and so there can be, if somebody is really good at something or just has a little different attitude about something, it really can. The directors, Dolores Lipinski-Long is the director, and her associate director, Baruti Barodakite, they do that, particularly for the soloists and the older dancers, that if somebody is really has a knack for something in particular, they do tweak it a bit each year, and it does keep it interesting for people, and it also, you know, shows people in their best light, you know, what you want to be, you always want to do.
Sure, and it's a great way to introduce young people to ballet, because if they can be told and understand the story when they come in, they can enjoy what's going on and the art of the dance on the stage. It's so very important, whether it's ballet or opera or Shakespeare when you go onto the stage. You know, if you have a little background on what the story is about, you're not struggling to find out what's going on. You already know, and you just are able to watch the art of what's happening on the stage.
Yeah, and I think having kids in the ballet does, you know, draw children in.
Sure.
You know, that they either imagine themselves doing it or, you know, they really do relate to the kids on stage.
Sure. Evidently, you can leave the Nutcracker, but the Nutcracker may never leave you. The ballet's rhythms and a host of associated memories don't disappear. They just get filed away in the part of the brain and released in flashbacks filled with sometimes early memories and emotions. And, of course, there's the whole Christmas thing. The Nutcracker serves up an idealized Christmas on a platter full of treats that everyone has been promised at one time or other, by our parents or by books and movies and TV specials. Christmas can be a joyful and problematical holiday for nearly everyone. It's not religious enough for some. It's too religious for others. It's lonely for those without family. It's too full of relatives for those who have had enough of being known by a childhood nickname. There's pressure to spend money, to commune, to be festive, and the holidays can become a time of heightened expectations and recurring disappointments. The Nutcracker, however, is simpler. Like Christmas, it always comes around in December, but no one expects quite so much from a ballet, so gifts can be discovered in a more relaxed manner. It provides for all of us a small oasis of beauty, inspiration, and togetherness for the Christmas season. Ruth Page Civic Ballet's popular recreation of the beloved holiday classic comes to life once more this Christmas season. Originally presented at the Erie Crown Theater from 1965 until 1997, this performance recreates Ruth Page's beloved original full-length staging of the Nutcracker. Exquisite dancing, stunning costumes, and magical settings in the land of snow and the kingdom of the sweets. The Nutcracker promises holiday joy for children of all ages. At the James Lumber Center at College of Lake County, Saturday, December 15th at 1 and 5, and Sunday, December 16th at 3 o'clock. For information, 847-543-2300. On the line with us right now is the Children's Director for the Ruth Page Civic Ballet, Laura Wade. Laura, if people would like to get some information about Ruth Page, they can call 312-337-6543. You know, it's an honor to have you on the show, having enjoyed the Nutcracker and your performances probably in the past, too. And it's just great to talk with you. I think those students up at Northwestern are pretty lucky to have you as one of their professors.
Well, thank you very much.
You know, I will wish you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Laura, and thanks so much for taking a little time.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Take care.
Bye.
Laura Wade from The Nutcracker, Ruth Page's Civic Ballet, The Nutcracker, one of the classics of Chicago ballet history, and certainly that continues with the great work that Laura's doing and Mrs. Long is doing and all the performers in one of the great classics, The Nutcracker. A little tidbit of information, you know, that the myth of the character of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was created for an ad campaign by the Chicago-based Montgomery Ward Department Store. In 1939, Ward's copywriter Robert May whipped up a rhyming verse story about Rudolph, originally Rollo, then it was Reginald the Red-Nosed Reindeer. The story was put into a coloring book and given to 2.5 million shoppers that Christmas. 6 million were given away by 1946. By 1949, Rudolph was such a hit that May took up his brother-in-law, Johnny Marks, on writing lyrics and a melody to match his story. Gene Autry recorded Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer that year and sold 2 million copies. And that's why Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer will always be with us. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope your listeners have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Steve Scott, the director of the Charles Dickens classic, the 35th annual production of A Christmas Carol at the Goodman Theater, 170 North Dearborn, through Saturday, December 29th. What a great way to introduce young people to the theater. For information, 312-443-3800. Very enjoyable chatting with Steve and realizing he was a faculty member over at Roosevelt University. Jevon Eagle, the CEO of David's Tea, leading that unique company in its introduction to the American market. The store is 1645 North Damon. I ask for Lisa Tipton. The phone number is 773-697-9737. Everything you want to know about tea and more. And the great, very friendly people. And I think you'll very much enjoy stopping into one of their wonderful stores. And finally, Laura Wade, the children's director for the Ruth Page Civic Ballet in their presentation of Tchaikovsky's classic, The Nutcracker. Tchaikovsky wrote three great ballets, of course, Swan Lake, The Nutcracker, and Sleeping Beauty. And this is one that certainly is, I'll say it again, a way to introduce young people to the ballet. A Christmas tradition, a Christmas classic, and certainly something that everyone will enjoy. For information, 312-337-6543. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes, I may not see forever. Forever.
can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose the music, the music.